Welcome to a special bonus episode of Hot Off the Wire. In this edition of our daily news program, we feature a selection of stories covering a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, managing editor of the National Newsroom at Lee Enterprises and your curator of news. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire through Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss daily news updates. And now, those stories from the Associated Press.
Rendezvous CEO Kyle Rand's interest in helping his own grandmother deal with the emotional and mental challenges of aging pushed him down a path that led him to co-found his virtual reality company in 2016.
Places where people's lives have become limited, we use this technology to open the world back up to them.
Rendezvous has shipped out their headsets to about 800 retirement communities in the United States and Canada to help seniors experience thrilling activities like mountain climbing and auto racing without leaving their seat. Mike Holthaus likes using the VR sets with his father, Jim.
Sort of unlocks an area of their brain that allows them to communicate, you know, a little bit more smoothly and a little bit more back and forth.
Sally Regalo's husband suffers from dementia. She says the VR technology allows the couple to experience fond memories of their travels together.
It's difficult for him to tell me what he's really thinking, but he seemed to be quite engaged with it.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Susie Lopez, a 41-year-old nurse who lives in Bakersfield, California, didn't know she was pregnant with her second child until days before giving birth. Before little Ryu was born, he developed outside his mother's womb, hidden by a basketball-sized ovarian cyst.
I knew my stomach was growing. I was just thinking it was the cyst. And he was kicking against probably the cyst. And so that's why I didn't feel any kicking at all.
Just 1 in 30,000 pregnancies occur in the abdomen instead of the uterus. And those that make it to full term are, quote, essentially unheard of, far, far less than 1 in a million. That's according to John Ozimek, the medical director of labor and delivery at Cedars-Sinai in Los Angeles, where Ryu was born.
I love everything about this whole story. I treasure it, and I do believe in miracles. God gave us this gift. The best gift ever.
I'm Haya Pinchwani.
The CDC estimates there have been at least 7.5 million flu illnesses, 81,000 hospitalizations, and 3,100 deaths from flu so far this season. At least 8 children have died. More than half the states report high or very high levels of illness. Once people return home from the holidays, the numbers are expected to rise. There is a new variant called Subclade K. It led to early outbreaks in the UK, Japan, and Canada. New York has been hard hit. Its health department reports the week ending December 20th marked the most flu cases the state has recorded in a single week since 2004, 71,000. The CDC also said only about 42% of adults and children have gotten a flu shot so far this year. It's far too soon to know if this flu season will be as severe as last winter's. I'm Ed Donahue.
Gary Walters spent more than 2 decades as White House chief usher.
I have been the longest serving chief usher of the White House, and I've served 7 different presidencies and was proud to do so.
Now Walters, who retired in 2007, has written a book called White House Memories, 1970 to 2007, Recollections of the Longest Serving Chief Usher.
When I thought about the book, I was thinking about the history of the White House and trying to establish that the White House is a home and not the political entity.
Walter says it was a bit jarring to see the White House East Wing recently torn down to make way for a huge ballroom, but he says construction has always gone on at the White House.
One of the great things about being the chief usher of the White House and working at the White House for the years that I did was getting to know the families with my own eyes and my own ears. I knew these people intimately.
I'm Donna Warder.
In the spring, the American Battle Monuments Commission removed the panels from the visitor center at the American Cemetery in Margraton, the final resting place for over 8,000 U.S. soldiers. The move came after President Donald Trump issued a series of executive orders ending many diversity programs. This angered Dutch officials, the families of U.S. soldiers, and the local residents who honor the American sacrifice by caring for the graves. Linda Hervu, whose book Forgotten chronicles black soldiers who fought on D-Day and segregation back home, says that they often saw their roles and contributions diminished.
Black American soldiers have participated in every war in American history since the Revolution. And since the Revolution, they saw their roles, their responsibilities, diminished. And so by World War II, you had a concerted effort to keep them in, out of positions that mattered.
On America Square, in front of Mount Gretna City Hall, is a small park named for Jefferson Wiggins, a black soldier. In his memoir, published posthumously in 2014, Wiggins describes burying the bodies of his white comrades, who he was barred from fraternizing with while they were alive. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
Two natural resources bills that had been passed on a bipartisan basis had been vetoed by President Donald Trump. Republican lawmakers that supported the bills are crying foul and are accusing President Trump of political retaliation for those vetoes. Trump vetoed drinking water pipeline legislation from Republican Representative Lauren Boebert of Colorado. Boebert was one of four House Republicans who sided with House Democrats early on to force the release of those files. In a social media post, Boebert suggests that the veto may have been political retaliation. In his letter to Congress, Trump mentions costs as the primary reason. Another bill vetoed by Trump would have given a tribe that had sued over the Florida Immigration Detention Center, known as Alligator Alcatraz, more control over their land. Trump appeared to acknowledge the tribe's opposition, saying that the tribe had actively sought to obstruct reasonable immigration policies by his administration. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Instead of who let the dogs out, it's who let the dogs in. On Tuesday, three more breeds joined the American Kennel Club's roster of recognized breeds. One of the newcomers is the Teddy Roosevelt Terrier, another the Russian Svetnaya Belanka, a lapdog developed in Soviet-era Russia, the third a centuries-old French hunting hound called the Basset Fauve de Bretagne. The AKC now recognizes 205 breeds. Recognition means eligibility for many U.S. dog shows and can increase a breed's visibility to the pet-loving public. Animal rights activists have long deplored dog breeding and the AKC for supporting it. The AKC says it's committed to all dogs' well-being. Julie Walker, New York.
A new year means a new era at Berkshire Hathaway. Warren Buffett isn't going anywhere. He'll remain chairman and plans to continue coming into the office every day. He's turning over the top spot to Greg Abel. Investors will be watching closely to see what changes Abel might make in Berkshire's trajectory, but they don't expect any seismic shifts. Buffett grew Berkshire from a struggling New England textile mill that he started buying for up to $7.60 a share in 1962 to the massive conglomerate that it is today, with shares that go for more than $750,000 a pop. Abel has already shown himself to be a more hands-on manager than Buffett, but he still follows the Berkshire model of autonomy for acquired companies. Tesla has lost its crown as the world's best-selling electric vehicle maker. Tesla says it delivered 1.64 million vehicles in 2025. Chinese rival BYD sold 2.26 million vehicles last year.
We're talking 300,000 to 400,000 below where you would have hoped Tesla would have been if you go back, call it 18, 24 months ago.
Market analyst Dan Ives was asked if Tesla's slump has any connection to Elon Musk's involvement in the Department of Government Efficiency.
Yeah, the politics in terms of the, I'll call it the political experiment with Musk and Trump, that definitely had a negative impact, especially the first half of the year. Probably the biggest lingering impact is in Europe.
Is Ives worried about Tesla?
We're so bullish on Tesla because of the autonomous and robotics era that's now here in 2026.
Musk's focus at Tesla has pivoted to robo-taxis and robots. I'm Ed Donahue.
In a court filing, the Trump administration states immigration officials do not plan to detain Kilmer Abrego Garcia again as long as a judge's order banning it stands. However, Immigration and Customs Enforcement did make clear it would detain Abrego Garcia if the order is lifted. The Salvadoran citizen's case has become a lightning rod in the immigration debate as he fights to remain in the U.S. after the government mistakenly deported him to his home country, where he was imprisoned. Earlier this month, U.S. District Judge Paula Zinnes questioned whether government officials could be trusted to follow court orders, barring them from taking Abrego Garcia into immigration custody or deporting him. I'm Ben Thomas.
There's been a surge of federal officers this week in Minnesota following new allegations of fraud by daycare centers run by Somali residents. The current moves comes after a right-wing influencer posted a video accusing the daycare centers of committing up to $100 million in fraud. During President Joe Biden's administration, 47 people were charged. The number of defendants has since grown to 78. 57 people have been convicted. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office for Minnesota, 82 of the 92 defendants accused of running schemes to get funds for child nutrition, housing services, and autism programs are Somali Americans. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
In an online post, the CDC's acting director, Jim O'Neill, states blatant fraud appears to be rampant in Minnesota, and the Trump administration has now frozen child care funds to the state. The move follows years of investigation that began with a $300 million scheme at the nonprofit Feeding Our Future, for which 57 defendants have been convicted. Prosecutors said the organization was at the center of the country's largest COVID-19-related fraud scam, in which defendants exploited a state-run, federally funded program intended to provide food for children. Earlier this month, the federal prosecutor alleged half or more of the roughly $18 billion in federal funds that supported 14 programs in Minnesota may have been stolen. I'm Ben Thomas.
George and Amal Clooney, along with their twins, have been awarded French citizenship. France's government announced the naturalizations last weekend in the Journal Officiel. Amal Clooney, a human rights lawyer, was naturalized under her maiden name, Amal Alamoudin. The couple had purchased an estate in France in 2021. In an October interview with Esquire, Clooney described their French farm as their primary residence. He expressed concerns about raising their kids in Hollywood's culture, preferring a quieter life in France. Representatives for Clooney did not respond to requests for comment on Monday. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The board of Washington, D.C.'s Kennedy Center voted less than 2 weeks ago to rename it, and workers added Trump's name the very next day. Not long after came the cancellations, a Christmas Eve jazz concert, and now a jazz New Year's Eve featuring the supergroup The Cookers. They didn't mention the renaming, but emphasized their commitment to music that bridges divisions. Separately, sax player Billy Harper says he would never even consider performing in a venue bearing a name that he says represents overt racism and deliberate destruction of African-American music and culture. Kennedy Center President Richard Grinnell tells AP the last-minute cancellations show those artists were always unwilling to perform for everyone. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Britain's Queen Camilla has spoken publicly for the first time about her personal experience of indecent assault.
I was reading my book and, you know, this, well, boy, man, attacked me and I did fight back.
Camilla told the BBC it happened when she was a teenager on a train.
It's been a taboo subject for so long. People haven't talked about it. I remember something that had been lurking in the back of my brain for a very long time.
Camilla says speaking out is one way she can use her royal platform to shine a light on the epidemic of violence against women.
But I remember anger, and I was so furious about it, and it sort of lurked for many years.
Camilla's account of the assault is in a new book, which says the man was arrested. I'm Ed Donahue.
California is holding off on revoking the commercial driver's licenses of some 17,000 people a week after immigrant groups filed a lawsuit. The state only sent out notices to invalidate the licenses after U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy pressured the state to make sure that immigrants who are in the country illegally are not granted the licenses. Now California says it wants to hold off on revoking commercial driver's licenses to make sure that truckers and bus drivers who legally qualify can keep them. But Duffy says the state may lose $160 million if it doesn't revoke those licenses by a January 5th deadline. Duffy already has withheld $40 million in federal funding because he says California isn't enforcing English proficiency requirements for truckers. I'm Donna Water.
Brigitte Bardot, the French 1960s sex symbol who became one of the greatest screen sirens of the 20th century and later a militant animal rights activist and far-right supporter, has died. French President Emmanuel Macron said on Sunday, "We are mourning a legend." Bardot became an international celebrity in the 1956 movie And God Created Woman, which triggered a scandal with scenes of her dancing on tables naked. Her cinema career spanned some 28 films.
Bardot's second career as an animal rights activist saw her travel to the Arctic to blow the whistle on the slaughter of baby seals, condemn the use of animals in laboratory experiments, and oppose Muslim slaughter rituals. Her activism earned her the Legion of Honour in 1985, France's highest recognition. Later, however, she fell from public grace as her animal protection diatribes took on an extremist tone, and she was convicted and fined five times in French courts of inciting racial hatred. She died at her home in southern France, aged 91. I'm Luke Garrett.
Perry Bamonte, longtime guitarist and keyboardist for the influential goth band The Cure, has died. The band says that Bamonte passed away after a short illness at home over Christmas. He worked with the band in various roles from 1984 to 1989, including as roadie and guitar tech. He officially joined the band in 1990, a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. Bamonte is featured on a number of The Cure's albums, including 1992's Wish, which features such hits as
Thursday, I don't care about you, it's Friday, I'm in love.
Bamonte was fired from The Cure in 2005, but had rejoined the group in recent years. His last performance was on November 1st, 2024 in London to launch The Cure's latest album, Songs of a Lost World. Bamonte was 65. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
His family says former Colorado Congressman and Senator Ben Nighthorse Campbell has died. He was 92. Campbell stood out in Congress with his cowboy boots, bolo ties, and ponytail. He was a member of the Northern Cheyenne tribe, a military veteran, a former Olympic judo athlete, cattle rancher, and jewelry maker when he was elected as a Democrat to Congress in 1986. While in the Senate, Campbell jumped to the Republican Party in 1995.
I've always been considered a moderate. To the consternation of the left wing of the Democratic Party, I imagine my continued moderacy will be now to the consternation of the right wing of the Republican Party.
Campbell was known for his passionate advocacy of Native American issues. He helped sponsor legislation upgrading the Great Sand Dunes National Monument in southern Colorado, where some of his ancestors were killed in a massacre, to a national park. His daughter told the AP, Campbell died of natural causes. I'm Ed Donahue.
Jeffrey R. Holland, a high-ranking official in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who was next in line to become the faith's president, has died. He was 85. The church announcing he died Saturday from complications associated with kidney disease. He'd been dealing with health issues and was hospitalized during the Christmas holiday. Holland led the governing body called the Quorum of the 12 Apostles, which helped set church policy while overseeing the many business interests of what is known widely as the Mormon Church. He previously served as president of Brigham Young University and was known for his work in education and interfaith relations. Henry B. Eyring is now next in line for the church's presidency. I'm Julie Walker.
Hey, this is Russell Wilson.
This is Joe Montana.
This is Dak Prescott.
Hey, this is Jason Kelce, and you're listening to Rob Motti.
Rob Motti.
Rob Motti.
Rob Motti.
Welcome to On Football. I'm Rob Motti. Happy New Year to everyone. It's the final week of the NFL's regular season, and 14 teams are going to make the playoffs. 12 are already decided. Four division winners crowned. Four more left to be decided. Both of the number one seeds are up for grabs. In the NFC, Seattle playing San Francisco Saturday night. Winner take the number one seed in the NFC. And the NFC West, the loser drops down to the 5 seed if it's Seattle, could be the 6 seed if it's San Francisco. So much left to be determined. Panthers, Buccaneers, winner take all game? Not exactly. If the Panthers win, they advance. If the Buccaneers win, they have to wait until Sunday, and they would need the Falcons to lose or tie against the Saints. And then the Ravens, Steelers, Sunday night, final game of the regular season. That is winner take all. That is for the AFC North title. Our guest this week, Seahawks safety Julian Love. Stay tuned for that conversation. Final week of the regular season means it's the final week for players and coaches to make their case for the NFL awards and the AP All-Pro roster. And this season, unlike any that I've seen in the past several, so many spots are up in the air. You look at the coach of the year, offensive player of the year, MVP. Very difficult decisions when you consider MVP. The last 12 years, it's gone to a quarterback. 9 of those times on a number one seed, the other 3 on a number 2 seed. So many tough decisions for the voters. I'm glad I don't have a vote. Seahawks safety Julian Love is one of the best players at his position, and he is Seattle's nominee for the very prestigious Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. Julian, thanks for joining me on this week's show. You guys have such a big game this week, right? The number one seed, bye, home field advantage, all that is at stake when you're playing the 49ers. What would it mean to be able to secure that and be home in front of the 12s for the playoffs?
Yeah, it's huge. I mean, you hit it on the head. I think we have a huge advantage at home with our 12s, with our home field crowd. So yeah, that's what we want. We want all roads to lead through Seattle, pretty much. So yeah, it's a lot at stake for sure.
When you look at this Niners team with that offense, so many weapons, Brock Purdy's back playing well, Christian McCaffrey having a great year. They even won last week without George Kittle. What's the biggest challenge when you look at what you have to take on?
Yeah, I think they have great players, obviously. And then really the thing that makes it all run is that just a great scheme. Shanahan's been doing it for a long time at a high level. And so he always is adapting and finding ways to get his guys the ball. And so that's kind of the battle we play. We know, like, straight up, we feel good. But they're going to have some wrinkles that we got to just be ready for.
For you personally, I know it's been a little bit of a challenge this year, right? You were down for a little bit, had some injury. How are you feeling now heading into being healthy in December, going into the most important part of the season?
Yeah, I feel good. It's definitely been a different year for me, missing 9 games, which is, you know, crazy to even say. And it was definitely a grind while I was in it. But I mean, all I'm focusing on is every time I step on the field now, you know, it's been 7 games so far I've played. Just make an impact, be productive on the field when I am. And so I feel like I've done that up to this point. And so, you know, thankfully I feel 100 right now. I can really just try to dominate into this late stretch.
Julian, you've been a Pro Bowl player. There are so many awards in the NFL that honor what you guys do on the field. And then there's this special Walter Payton Man of the Year recognition for what you do in the community and giving back. And congratulations on being one of the 32 nominees. What would that award mean to you?
Man, that would mean a lot. You know, I thankfully you know, had the privilege to grow up in Chicago. And so the name Walter Payton, and it's like he's a superhero to my generation, the generation above. I feel like you weren't a Chicago kid if you didn't have some random VHS highlight tape of Walter Payton. And so he just had an impact on the community for sure. And just obviously on the field, but this represents everything off the field. And so anything with his name attached to it is a huge honor. And, you know, to get nominated for something like just getting out in the community and doing good things, I think is great, but it's about these families.
I know you have a youth football camp that you did last year that's pretty big. What are some of the different areas of passion, of interest that you have of working and doing different things?
Yeah, so you hit it on the head. Well, first, my wife and I, we kind of, a few years ago, talked and basically said kind of which areas do we want to focus on of being better of service. And the first area is kids. And that's, you know, from babies, I'll touch on that, but from babies through teenage years. And kind of the point that you said, like, yeah, I have a pretty great camp I do in Chicago. This past year we had 400 kids free. I put my own money into it. Some sponsors would help out and, it, you know, kind of make it overall a great time. But I was that kid. I was that kid that I know my parents were straining to get me to these showcases, these camps, all these things, trying to get me to meet NFL players who I saw as, you know, like, you know, they weren't of this world. They were heroes. And I was that kid. And so I think that's kind of leads kind of how I approach just interacting with kids. The resources are great. We do a lot and have partnered with a lot to give resources, but kids just want to say hi to me. They just want to ask what my favorite video game is. They just want to, like, celebrate, do goofy things, do the celebration dances. Like, all those little things I think are really impactful for kids that lets them see that, all right, I'm accessible. It's doable. Reaching certain heights, becoming successful is doable. This guy's from my area and he does it. And so that is kind of how I approach kids. And then, sorry, I kind of tangent a little bit. The second bucket is mothers. We had some struggles postpartum after we had our little guy, and we just thought, like, man, we have every resource in the world, and we still have struggles. What are people without resources doing? Like, how are they getting by? And so, mothers postpartum is a huge area of focus, and we've volunteered both in Chicago and out here in Seattle, We give a lot of resources just to mothers just have one step ahead and are prepared for when those tough times come after the baby is here. And then the third area is food. Food insecurity is very real, especially nowadays. And both in Chicago and in Seattle, we just try to give families, kids, access to healthy foods. I've been saying, like, I think having healthy food shouldn't be a luxury for people. And so in the communities I'm involved in, I just try to get that out to them.
Time for some pro picks. The four pack last week was 3-1 straight up, 2-2 against the spread. Overall this year, 49-18-1 straight up, 41-26-1 against the number. My best bet this week, I'm looking at Dallas, 7-8-1 on the road against the Giants. New York is 3-13. Cowboys are 3.5-point favorites. Dak Prescott has never had a losing season in a full healthy year when he's played the entire season. The Cowboys haven't had back-to-back losing years in 23 seasons. So they're trying to play to avoid that, to finish 8-8-1. The Giants, well, last week, they cost themselves the number one overall pick by beating the Las Vegas Raiders. They can't afford to drop any further in the draft order. Cowboys 30-20. My upset specials are 13-4 this year, both straight up and against the number. I'm looking at Carolina 8-8 against Tampa Bay 7-9. Already told you about the ramifications of that game. Now, the Buccaneers are 2.5-point favorites. The Panthers secure the division with a win or a tie. They beat the Bucs in Carolina a couple weeks ago. It's difficult to beat a team twice in 3 weeks, but this Tampa Bay team has too many players who look like they've packed it in. They're ready for a vacation. They couldn't win one game down the stretch against a soft schedule to make this a winner-take-all game. That's why they have to wait until Sunday, should they win, an entire 24 hours or so to see if they get in. I think the Panthers are going to put them out of their misery 24-20. Win the game, win the division, end Tampa Bay's season. Next, I'm looking at Tennessee 3-13 at Jacksonville 12-4. The Jaguars are 12.5-point favorites. Trevor Lawrence, Liam Coen, they're trying to wrap up the AFC South. Meanwhile, Tennessee, Cam Jordan, he's played well, especially towards the end of the season. 8 touchdowns, 1 interception in the last 4 games. It's been a bright spot in an otherwise dismal year for Tennessee. The Jaguars, an incredible turnaround. They'll win this game going away 27-12, clinch the AFC South, and head into the playoffs. Last, Green Bay 9-6-1 at Minnesota 8-8. The Vikings are 7-point favorites because the Packers are locked into the number 7 seed. They should rest their starters, get ready for their first round matchup against the number 2 seed in the NFC, whether it's Chicago or Philadelphia. The Vikings have won 4 in a row, and now they're playing to finish the year off with a winning record at 9-8. They're not worried about draft positioning. J.J. McCarthy should be back for this one. I'll take the Vikings against a team that's going to rest 24-13. That's it for this week. Thank you to Julian Love. Thank you for listening and watching On Football. And thanks to Marcela Sanchez for producing this episode. Please check out apnews.com for the full pro picks on football analysis and more NFL news.
The U.S. unveiled its men's hockey roster for the upcoming Milan Cortina Winter Olympics. The only additions were forwards Tage Thompson and Clayton Keller and defenseman Seth Jones. Thompson and Keller helped the U.S. win the World Hockey Championship for the first time since 1933. Only Americans Chris Kreider and Adam Fox of the New York Rangers are not back from the Four Nations. 36-year-old Hillary Knight is set to make her 5th Olympic appearance on a 23-player U.S. women's national team that's favored to win gold. UConn's Brianna Stewart won 4 national championships and the most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament each time. When asked who they believe tops their list of women's college players during the last half century, nearly a dozen players and coaches at a USA basketball camp this month chose Stewart. A panel of former players, coaches, and AP journalists voted on the greatest college players during the women's poll era during a season-long 50-year celebration. Stewart, Cheryl Miller, and Diana Taurasi headlined the list along with Caitlin Clark. The NCAA says it won't grant eligibility to any player who had signed an NBA contract after Baylor's midseason addition of a 2023 draft pick who had been playing professionally in Europe prompted criticism from coaches across college basketball. The Bears recently signed 7-footer James Naji of Nigeria. He was drafted by Detroit before a series of trades that left the 21-year-old's draft rights with New York. The NCAA says players also aren't eligible if they sign two-way NBA contracts with links to G League affiliates. Young gymnasts were sounding warnings about a coach as far back as 2017. That's the same year the U.S. Center for Safe Sport was created in the wake of the Larry Nassar sexual abuse scandal. People familiar with the case involving Sean Gardner told the Associated Press he had agreed to a permanent ban from coaching early this year, but the center never closed the deal. Safe Sport says putting Gardner on temporary suspension was effectively the same as a permanent ban. Gardner has pleaded not guilty to federal child pornography charges and is awaiting trial. UConn and Tennessee have been the best women's basketball programs over the last 50 years, earning the top spots in the Associated Press Top 25 all-time poll. As part of its season-long coverage of the 50-year milestone of the women's poll, the AP used a formula that took into account total appearances by a program during the poll era, percentage of polls a program has been ranked, and weighed the number of top five appearances. Since UConn's first appearance at number one in 1995 after beating Tennessee on Martin Luther King Day, UConn has held the top spot in the poll for 259 weeks, more than double Tennessee. The Lady Vols were second, followed by Stanford, Louisiana Tech, and Baylor. Three-time NBA MVP Nikola Jokic is set to miss a few weeks due to a hyperextended left knee. The Denver Nuggets disclosed the injury on Tuesday. The injury is not season-ending and doesn't require surgery. He will be reevaluated in 4 weeks. Jokic got hurt during Denver's loss in Miami on Monday. He ranks fifth in NBA scoring this season and leads in rebounds and assists. Denver faces challenges without Jokic as other key players are already sidelined. Authorities say New England Patriots star wide receiver Stephon Diggs is facing strangulation and other criminal charges related to an incident earlier this month. News of the charges emerged after a court hearing on Tuesday in Dedham, Massachusetts. It was immediately unclear what led to the charges. Diggs' lawyer said in an emailed statement that Diggs, quote, categorically denies these allegations. The 32-year-old NFL veteran joined New England last March. He is the leading receiver for the AFC East Championship with 82 catches and 970 yards receiving. Anthony Joshua, the Nigerian-British boxer and former world heavyweight champion, was involved in a car accident that killed two other passengers in Nigeria on Monday. The crash occurred on a major thoroughfare linking Ogun State, a nearby city, to Lagos, the country's economic capital. Joshua had beaten YouTuber-turned-boxer Jake Paul 9 days ago in a bout in Miami, which he was using to regain sharpness in the ring ahead of an attempt to reclaim the world heavyweight title, which he lost in a 2021 fight to Alexander Usyk. I'm Gethin Coolbaugh.
Bill Murphy has been an Indiana University football season ticket holder for 66 years. 55 of them have been losing seasons. A true diehard fan, Murphy has had to wait decades for his football team to make a bowl game. At 77 years old, Murphy had a backup plan.
I told my wife and I told my son and my daughter, I said, look, if we ever go to the Rose Bowl, and I've already passed away, I want you to take my ashes, buy a seat, buy a program, put the program on the seat, put my ashes on the seat, and I'll be there at the Rose Bowl.
This time around, Indiana has made the Rose Bowl.
So we have our flight, we have our hotel, we have our tickets.
And he's taking along the family.
I'm still pinching myself.
I'm Lisa Dwyer.
In Switzerland, investigators think they know what started a deadly fire at a ski resort. The belief is sparkling candles on top of champagne bottles set off the fire at the busy La Constellation Bar at the Crans Montana Resort when they came too close to the ceiling. About 40 people were killed. This man, Oscar, got out.
People were banging on the windows because it's like a winter garden. I don't know if you call it like this in English. It's like semi-outside spot with, yeah, but still with windows. And everyone was banging on the windows and stuff, screaming. It was like a horror movie, but they couldn't get out. I think the windows were too thick.
The candles give off a stream of upward shooting sparks. The resort is in a small town. This man lives there.
I think it's a reminder to all of us to always appreciate life because it can happen even in Crans-Montana.
Mourners have been leaving candles and flowers at an impromptu memorial near the bar. I'm Ed Donahue.
Tremors from the earthquake interrupted President Claudia Sheinbaum's first news briefing of the new year as seismic alarms sounded. Friday's quake had a preliminary magnitude of 6.5 and its epicenter was near the town of San Marcos in the southern state of Guerrero, near the Pacific Coast Resort of Acapulco, according to Mexico's National Seismological Agency. There's been no immediate reports of damage or casualties. A grandmother and her 5-year-old grandson burned to death in Gaza when their tent caught fire as thousands of Palestinians battle harrowing winter conditions in flimsy makeshift housing and the humanitarian crisis there deepens. The nylon tent in Yarmouk caught fire on Thursday night from cooking dinner, says a neighbor. Ashraf Al-Sulwer, who lives in a nearby tent with his family of five, tells the AP, "We woke up to the sound of our neighbors screaming. They were saying, 'Fire, fire.' The reason is that they lit a fire to cook." Palestinians in Gaza have long called for mobile homes and caravans to be allowed into the area to protect them against living in impractical and worn-out tents. In Yarmouk displacement camp, many residents live in nylon tents near a garbage dump. Nylon is like fuel. It was a scary fire, Al-Sulwer says, calling for more reasonable living conditions for the people there. I'm Charles de Letesma.
The Malaysian government says that on Wednesday, a vessel began a new search in the Indian Ocean for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, which headed to Beijing on March 8, 2014, when it disappeared from air traffic radar just 39 minutes after taking off from Kuala Lumpur. The Boeing 777 was carrying 239 passengers and crew. Despite a previous massive search in the southern Indian Ocean, only a few small fragments of the plane washed ashore. No large wreckage, no bodies ever recovered. In March, the Malaysian government gave the green light for a no-find, no-fee contract with Ocean Infinity to resume a 55-day search of the seabed in a new location, covering some 5,800 miles. The company will be paid $70 million only if it finds the wreckage. I'm Donna Water.
Doctors Without Borders and CARE are among more than two dozen humanitarian organizations that Israel will bar from operating in Gaza in the new year. It says the groups have failed to comply with new registration rules for sharing staff, funding, and operations information. Israel says those rules are aimed at preventing Hamas and other militant groups from infiltrating the aid organizations. It's claimed throughout the war that Hamas was siphoning off aid supplies, a charge the UN and aid groups have denied. Those organizations call the new rules arbitrary and warn the ban will harm a civilian population that's in desperate need of humanitarian aid. I'm Ben Thomas.
The song you're hearing could send someone to prison in China's Xinjiang region. It's performed by Rahima Mahmoud, a Uyghur singer and activist. She's singing the song Arak Makam, a traditional Uyghur song dating back centuries.
The words, the lyrics are a lot about the divine, the beloved. And you can hear from the singing Allah, God.
For generations, Uyghurs, the Turkish ethnic minority in China's Xinjiang region, have played these songs at parties and weddings. Now, authorities are warning Uyghur residents that downloading, listening to, or sharing certain Uyghur language songs could lead to their arrest. The warning was relayed to residents during a meeting held by police and other local officials in the city of Kashgar last October. A recording of that meeting was shared exclusively with the Associated Press by the Norway-based nonprofit Uyghur Help. Over the past decade, China has ramped up its repressive policies, restricting Uyghurs' cultural and religious expression. Though classified as autonomous, the region is tightly controlled by China's central government. At the October meeting in Kashgar, a pre-recorded message listed seven categories of so-called problematic songs.
So many of the songs on that
that list. They are traditional folk songs.
Rachel Harris is a professor of ethnomusicology at SOAS, University of London, who focuses on Uyghur culture. She says religious expression is why many of the songs are being targeted.
On the one hand, the Chinese Communist Party seeks to represent itself as the protector of Chinese Uyghur heritage. But on the other hand, it works very carefully to make sure that nothing is expressed which could, as it puts it, damage the unity of the nationalities.
The pre-recorded message also included examples of several people who had served 10 days in detention for possessing the banned songs. Attendees at the meeting were also instructed to avoid using phrases like Assalamu alaikum, a common greeting among Muslims. The AP confirmed this new policy through interviews with Xinjiang residents whose acquaintances were detained for playing or sharing Uyghur music. The singer Rahima Mahmoud, who now lives in the United Kingdom, describes the ban as a removal of the soul.
Even for any ordinary Uyghur people, banning the language, the music, the songs, everything that represents us as people, that is devastating. It's like leaving dead.
On this week's AP Religion Roundup, Christian music surges in popularity, and Pope Leo delivers his first Christmas message as pontiff. The song Hard Fought Hallelujah by Brandon Lake and Jelly Roll broke through the Billboard Hot 100's all-genre top 40 this year, placing it in direct competition with mainstream artists.
I would rather be known as an artist who carries the message of Christ than be known as a Christian artist.
Brandon Lake built his career in Christian worship, but he says he sees opportunity in the mainstream country market as well.
If I can surround myself with all these artists that I love and look up to and collaborate with them, I believe we can change even more millions of people's lives.
Streams of new music from a variety of genres were down compared to last year, but one type of music is on the rise, Christian and gospel music. Experts and artists say there are a variety of reasons why religious music is connecting.
How do we keep moving forward? How do we keep getting the message to more and more people?
Singer Lauren Daigle told AP she sees recording contracts with major labels as a chance to spread her message of hope.
And so when I look at Atlantic, that was my very first thing of, oh, okay, this is a much broader spectrum.
Christian music embraces many different genres, and industry professionals say its quality has improved. Christian artists say they hope this isn't just a trend, but a movement. Pope Leo XIV remembered Gaza's suffering in his first Christian sermon. AP's Rika Ann Garcia reports.
Pope Leo XIV, during his first Christmas Day homily, remembered the people of Gaza, exposed for weeks to rain, wind, and cold, and said that the world's many conflicts can only be silenced through dialogue. Around 6,000 faithful attended inside the basilica, with another 4,000 following from St. Peter's Square, ahead of the Urbi et Orbi blessing. I'm Rika Ann Garcia.
I'm Walter Ratliff.
I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you for listening. Audio provided by the Associated Press. Be sure to subscribe to Hot Off the Wire on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss an episode.